Hi friends, and welcome to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, where each week we share an idea on the Parsha and how it relates to Jewish history, along with all the books and articles I've read over Shabbos to learn more about it. A reminder to sign up for our weekly email that you can get through Substack, readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com, where you can get a write-up of our weekly class along with all of the links to the articles and books and the sources that I quote that I've discovered on my Shabbos reading journeys. Thank you so much to our friends and sponsors, Janet and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. Most people have heard of the five books of Moses, but have you ever heard of the seven books of Moses? There are two verses in our Parsha recited every time we remove the Torah from the Aron Kodesh that the Talmud says are considered their own independent book of the Torah. Those verses, of course, are the words Vayehi b'Nesoa HaAron Vayomer Moshe Kumo Hashem V'yafutzu Oyvecha V'yanusu Misanecha Mipanecha. That's the first verse, and the second verse that we say, of course, is Uvenucha Yomar Shuva Hashem Rivavos Alfe Yisrael. The psukim mean that when the Aron went out, Moshe would say, "Advance Hashem, may all our enemies be scattered, and may our foes flee before you." And when the Aron stopped, Moshe would say, "Return Hashem, you are the Jewish people's myriads of thousands." That's the translation from Sepharia. These two verses, explains the Talmud, are considered their own book of the Torah. Just these two psukim are their own book in the Torah. Meaning there are really seven books of the Torah. You have Bereishis, Shemos, count with me, that's two. Vayikra is three. Then Bamidbar, up until these verses, is four. Then you have these verses, they're their own book, that's five. Then you have the verses of Bamidbar that follow this, that's six. And then you have Sefer Devarim. These two verses essentially divide the book of Bamidbar into three separate books, because they're their own book. So you have what comes before, what comes after, and these two psukim are their own Sefer. This is all said in the Gemara. There is clearly something unique about these two verses. You may even notice that inside of a Sefer Torah, these two verses are bracketed by a letter Nun. How exactly they are bracketed, there is a responsa from the Maharshal that you can look up on this, and of course, we link to the Tshuva of the Maharshal about how exactly the Nun should be positioned in a Sefer Torah. You have to sign up to our weekly Substack, Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, Substack.com to find that over there. What makes these verses so special? Why are they considered their own book in the Torah? One opinion in the Talmud explains that these verses are actually written out of place. They should have been written elsewhere, but they were included here in order to break up the negative stories of the Jewish people leaving Har Sinai and then later complaining to God. It's a strange reason to include verses out of place. Were the rabbis worried that readers of the Torah would become too sad if they read these stories back to back? Why exactly are the verses of Vayehi b'Nesoa included here? Rav Yaakov ben Usher, in his commentary Bala Turim, provides an allusion that demonstrates that these two verses compromise their own book of the Torah. The verses Vayehi b'Nesoa, the Bala HaTurim explains, has 12 words corresponding to the last verse in the Torah. Count the amount of words that are in the pasuk of Vayehi b'Nesoa HaAron, and you will notice there are 12 words, and there are 12 words in the last pasuk in the Torah, which of course says Ulechol hayad hachazaka ulechol hamora hagadol asher osa Moshe le'enei kol Yisroel. That is 12 words. So Vayehi b'Nesoa corresponds to the last pasuk in the Torah, and the second verse that we say after Vayehi b'Nesoa, Uvenucha Yomar, has 7 words, and that the Bala Turim explains corresponds to the first verse in the Torah. That one I'm sure you're familiar with. Bereishis bara Elokim es haShemayim v'es haAretz. Count the words. There are 7 words in the first verse in the Torah. Count them all yourself. It works out. It's a clever allusion, just like the verses in our Parsha of Vayehi b'Nesoa HaAron have 7 and 12 words. 12 words, Vayehi b'Nesoa HaAron, Uvenucha Yomar, 7 words. So too the Torah itself begins with a verse that has 7 words and ends with a verse that has 12 words. So we see from here, says the Bala Turim, that the verses of Vayehi b'Nesoa and Uvenucha Yomar are like their own book of the Torah. There's one obvious problem. As Rav Tzadok asks, the allusion is backwards. The first verse in the Torah, Bereishis Bara, has 7 words, and the last verse in the Torah has 12 words. So shouldn't it be the first verse of Vayihi Ben Soa that corresponds to the first pasuk in the Torah, and Uvenucha Yomar should correspond to the last pasuk in the Torah? The illusion is backwards. Why does Vayihi Ben Soa, which is the first pasuk we read of this own mysterious parsha, why does that correspond to the last pasuk in the Torah, and then the second pasuk, Uvenucha Yomar, corresponds to the first pasuk in the Torah? Reb Tzadok writes, and this is in Pri Tzadok, V'yesh lahavin l'fi remez zeh, lama nirmas kodem neged ha-pasuk disof ha-Torah mispar yud beiz v'achar kach mispar zayin tevos keneged ha-pasuk d'tchilas ha-Torah. U'betorah lahepech, matchil b'pasuk sheyesh zayin tevos u'mesayim b'pasuk sheyesh bo yud beiz tevos. You have it all backwards. Vayihi ben Soa should correspond to the first pasuk in the Torah, uvenucha yomar should correspond to the last pasuk in the Torah. Why does the Baal HaTurim's allusion have it backwards? To understand the meaning of this backwards allusion and the larger significance of the verses, this separate sefer of the Torah, as the Gemara in Shabbos tells us of Vayihi Ben Soa Aron, let's explore the notion of alternative history and its connection to Torah. Most people are introduced to the concept of alternative history not through their study of Jewish history, but from their obsession with sports. Alternative history, which explores how the world would have looked differently if historical events were altered, is a familiar parlor game among sports fans. Bill Simmons' Book of Basketball dedicates an entire chapter to such questions, which he calls the what-if game. Seasoned sports fans already know the most famous what-if question. What if the Portland Trail Blazers selected Michael Jordan with their pick in the 1984 NBA draft instead of, you guessed it, Sam Bowie? Sports history is filled with such questions. What if Wayne Gretzky had never been traded to the Kings? What if LeBron James decided to play soccer as a kid instead of basketball? Sports Illustrated had a full issue exploring the greatest what-ifs of sports. They even designed mock what-if magazine covers, imagining how they would have covered such events if they turned out differently. The lure for such what-if questions extends beyond sports. As Bill Simmons explains, we spend an inordinate amount of time playing the what-if game. What if I never got married? What if I had gone to Harvard instead of Yale? What if I hadn't punched my boss in the face? You can't go back, and you know you can't go back, but you keep rehashing it anyways. This, of course, is not a recent phenomenon. People have been imagining different draft orders, or imagining if their favorite show or movie was cast with a different lead actor, as long as we have had imaginations. Imagine if Dwight Schrute of The Office was played by Seth Rogen, who actually auditioned for the role, instead of Rainn Wilson, who, as we know, secured the role. Most of the time, however, such what-if speculation was reserved for more serious historical questions. Renowned alternative historian Harry Turtledove writes in his book, The Best Alternate History Stories of the 20th Century, that the first example of alternate history dates back 2 millennia when Roman historian Titus Livius, oftentimes referred to as Livy, he had a nickname apparently, speculated what would have been if Alexander the Great succeeded in conquering Europe. Jewish tradition does not dismiss the importance of such questions either. The Or HaChaim suggests, based on the Talmud and Sota on Daf Tes Amud Aleph 9a, that had Moshe entered into the land of Israel and built the Beis HaMikdash, it could have never been destroyed. Instead, had the Jewish people sinned, God would have taken his wrath out on the Jewish people rather than just destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Moshe, of course, did not enter the land of Israel, but such speculation of what would have happened had he entered is certainly a form of alternative history. Alternative history is sometimes quite bleak. In 1976, Tradition Journal published an article by Gary Epstein entitled, Could Judaism Survive Israel? It is one of the few tradition articles that was published with an introductory editorial note that stated, although the editors of Tradition regard the state of Israel as a pivotal instrumentality for the survival of Judaism in the modern world, they deem it important to open the pages of this journal for the discussion of controversial opinions. This editorial warning was not enough to help the article skirt controversy. The article, which considers the future of Judaism if, God forbid, chas v'shalom, Israel was destroyed, provoked a storm of letters to the editor, questioning questioning the merit of publishing such speculation. A more tasteless article than the one by Gary Epstein on his self-serving proposition that Judaism can survive the fall of Israel, I have not read in a long time, one letter to the editor read. Another letter paraphrased the famous line of the Kutzke Rebbe, much of this article should not have been thought about, more of it not spoken about, and most of it not put into printed form. The purpose of alternative history was clearly lost on many of the readers. Of course, not all alternative history is so bleak. Professor Jeffrey Gurak uses alternative history in his book, The Holocaust Averted, An Alternate History of American Jewry, 1938 to 1967, to shed light on his normal focus. He's an actual professor of American Jewish history. This is an important function of alternate history, helping better understand and appreciate the nature of our actual history. As Gurak explains, how does this presumed saga help us understand and appreciate the real course of the post-war years for American Jews? Overlaying this dystopian counterfactual vision resides a series of provocative messages about the community's actual history and ultimately its destiny. Through our foggy mirror of fiction, the legacy of real events is visible. Others have followed in Gurak's footsteps and used alternative history to explore the actual history of the American Jewish community. Professor Zev Elef considered the alternative history of a far more niche question. What if Rav Aaron Lichtenstein never made Aliyah and instead remained in the United States? Elef explores how Rav Lichtenstein's presence could have potentially impacted the selection process for the next president of Yeshiva University at the time. Perhaps Rabbi Emanuel Rachman would have been selected as YU president instead of Rabbi Lamb, the actual selection. Even when considering niche questions, alternative history is still a precarious game to play. Elef's article provoked a response from none other than Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, Rav Lichtenstein's wife, who criticized Elef's imagined history for assigning far too passive a role to Rav Lichtenstein had he stayed in the United States. In response, Zev Elef published an article cleverly entitled Retiring My Modern Orthodox DeLorean, a reference, of course, to the famed car from the movie Back to the Future, that essentially concluded his career as an alternative historian. Elef begins his response article with an apology for the potential insensitivity that alternative history endeavors. For most of us, Elef writes, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein was a teacher and a heroic symbol. That's what made the what if Rav Aaron had stayed conversation so very interesting. Still, for others, he was a husband, father, and grandfather. Changing his life, retaining him for American Jewry, however fictitious, must have erased memories and milestones. I am sorry if the project appeared insensitive. Despite the brevity of his career as an alternative historian, Professor Elef's retirement should not be seen as the end of alternative history within the modern Orthodox community. Many others have engaged in the practice as well. Just a month prior to Elef's article on alternative history, another article published by Leah Sarna explored a different provocative question. Get ready for this. What if Rabbi Joseph Baer Soloveitchik had been a woman? The article, written in response to the Orthodox Union statement on women's leadership, imagines an alternative universe where Josefa Bela Soloveitchik would have studied Tanakh growing up. I don't know if this is heretical. I'm just sharing the history with you. But she would not have been tutored in the complex methodologies of Brisk. Similar to past examples of alternative history, Sarna justified her speculation as a window to better understand the present moment. She writes, unfortunately, this is not some dystopian novel. This happens in every generation, including our own. Women of brilliance in mind and spirit are born into the Orthodox community, and our community actively deprives itself of their service, not because of their brains or potential, but their gender. And good alternative history will always help illuminate the actual course of history. As Gavriel Rosenfeld writes in his his introduction to the book, What Ifs of Jewish History, From Abraham to Zionism, Rosenfeld writes, "Scholars employ counterfactual reasoning to better understand the forces of historical causality." Anytime someone, well, other than Norm Macdonald, who has a great bit on this, and of course I link to it in the Substack, but I might be, I don't know, PG-13 language. Anytime someone other than Norm Macdonald speculates about going in a time machine to kill baby Hitler, they are really making a claim about the causes of the atrocities of the Holocaust. If Hitler was killed, perhaps it could have been avoided in whole or in part. Whenever we make the causal claim that X caused Y, Rosenfeld writes, we implicitly affirm that Y would not have occurred in the absence of X. Still, there is another reason beyond historical causality that we engage in alternative history. And here, Rosenfeld shares something truly illuminating. The third and perhaps primary reason why we ask what if lies in the broader area of human psychology. It is in our very nature as human beings to wonder what if. At various junctures in our lives, we may speculate about what might have happened if certain events had or had not occurred in our past. What if we had lived in a different place, attended a different school, taken a different job, married a different spouse? When we ask such questions, we are really expressing our feelings about the present. We are either grateful that things worked out as they did, or we regret that they did not occur differently. The same concerns are involved in the realm of counterfactual history. Counterfactual history explores the past less for its own sake than to utilize it instrumentally to comment upon the state of the contemporary world. When producers of counterfactual histories imagine how the past might have been different, they invariably express their own subjective hopes and fears. And this brings us back to the verses of Vayihi ben Soa Ha'aron. Rav Soloveitchik has a truly remarkable thesis about the significance of these verses. They represent the alternative history of the Jewish people. These verses appear just as the Jewish people are leaving their encampment at Har Sinai. Once they leave their location at the site of revelation, the Jewish people begin to unravel. They start complaining about the conditions of their journey to the land of Israel. Jewish history itself begins to unravel following the departure of the Jewish people from Sinai, the sin of the spies, Chet HaMeraglim. They wander for 40 years, and Moshe is condemned never to enter into the land of Israel. The verses of Vayihi ben Soa dare to imagine an alternative history where the Jewish people travel directly from Har Sinai into Eretz Yisrael. An alternative history where Moshe leads the Jewish people directly into the land of Israel. As Rabbi Soloveitchik writes regarding that alternative version of biblical history, there would have been no need for an inverted nun at the beginning and inverted nun at the end. The verse would have been the climax of the whole story, not an inversion. Jewish history would have taken a different course. Had Moses entered the land of Israel, our history would never have been taken from us. The messianic era would have commenced with the conquest of the land of Israel by Moses. But it was not to be. Once leaving Sinai, the Jewish people started to fall apart, and the possibility of Moshe leading them directly into the land of Israel was bracketed into the world of alternative history. Rav Soloveitchik explains, it was then that Vayihi ben Soa Ha'aron lost its place. Instead of the march bringing them closer to the land of Israel, it took them away from the promised land. The nuns were inverted, and with the inversion, Jewish history became inverted, and it is still inverted. The parsha is still dislocated. Despite the dislocation, these verses were still canonized. Everyone has an alternative history that hovers in the background of their minds. Every decision we make, who to marry, where to live, what profession to pursue, creates the alternative universe that asks, what if life had worked out differently? And this is why the illusion of the Baal HaTurim is so profound. The verse of Vayihi ben Soa corresponds to the last verse in the Torah, while the second verse, Uvenucha Vayomar corresponds to the first verse in the Torah. It is a prayer of sorts that our endings, how our life actually turned out, should have the same passion, idealism, and intentionality as our beginnings. Alternative history begins where real life ends. And when we take the Torah from the Ark, we silently pray that however our life may have unfolded, wherever it may have ended, whatever moment we have before us should have the same optimistic sentiment as our beginnings. The last verse becomes the first verse. Where alternative history ends, real life begins. Where we end becomes a new beginning. So thank you again for listening to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha. To get the links to all the articles, sources, and books mentioned, be sure to subscribe to our weekly email, readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com. Substack is spelled S-U-B-S-T-A-C-K. readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com. Thank you again to our dearest friends and sponsors, Jana and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. Thank you so much for listening, and keep reading each and every Shabbos.